Welcome to the Data Able podcast, where Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser dive into data. Each week, they cover the culture, knowledge, and practices that successful organizations, leaders, and individuals use to get value out of data.
Welcome to another episode of Data Able. I'm excited to announce a brand new series that we're rolling out on the show called Analytics on the Road. For those that might not know, my podcast partner, Dave, has been traveling through Africa and Europe for the past 3 months. Along the way, he had the chance to meet up with data people from all walks of life. He wanted to share their voices and find commonality and community, learn from them, and share in our data challenges that we all face. To start off Analytics on the Road, we head to Cape Town, South Africa, where Dave had the pleasure to speak with Layla Reckleaf and Julia Renapre. They work for an organization called Open Up, a civil society organization that focuses on bridging the gap between government and people. They have an amazing passion for improving the lives of South African citizens, and one of the core ways that they do that is by helping citizens access and use their government's data. I'll let you listen to the rest for yourself.
Welcome, everyone. Today, I am lucky to be here with Layla Reckleaf and Julia
Renapre.
Okay, I get it. And we're here at Open Up, and we just got done with a great breakfast. And you do this every Friday. But before going into the breakfast and all the great things, like, tell us a little bit about what Open Up is and what does it do?
Open Up is a civil society organization that works in the space of connecting citizens to government and in making their access of government and of local government to make it more accessible and to encourage them to work in a space of co-governance. Mm-hmm. So we really look at working in that space of bridging the gap between government and between people.
Awesome. And you had done, and I think still do things around like even data journalism and other areas, like you really, you know, and believe a lot in open source. Tell about some of the current work that you may be doing. Is there any projects you can talk about that, you know, talk a little bit about?
Data is a very big focus for us. Obviously, if we can encourage a state to open up data sets and make it accessible to citizens, then from the other perspective, we need to then skill up the citizens in how to access the data and how to consume it and how to use it. We work, all of our projects, I would say, are probably got a very heavy data focus, and we use technology or online tools that we build in order to provide a more ease of access into that data. So most of our projects and most of our tools are data driven. From our perspective, from a training perspective, we teach people data literacy, just basic functionality so that they are empowered and enabled to engage with government on that level.
Excellent. And we'll get a little bit more too on like what you've seen in that data literacy space and with your clients and what has worked and what hasn't, but maybe we'll actually hit a little rapid fire, get to know you both better, have some you know, fun here. So don't take these at all serious. We're just gonna have a little fun. So if I was gonna say, Julia, what's your data superpower?
Probably database building. That's my passion. It's what I love. It's what I'm good at.
Cool. See, and I thought you were going to say GIS. So we'll talk more GIS.
GIS doesn't function without a well-built database.
Very true. Very true. Well stated. How about you, Lila?
I would definitely say that my data superpower would be, I think, being able to create different methodologies around approaching data, engaging data, and being able to extract and shape it to the need that you have. So very much in the literacy and the training side, that would be it, yeah.
And for you, I mean, you had started here because you were actually taking training with Open Up, right? And
Open Up had run a data journalism academy. Well, I had started the first one in Africa, data journalism academy, back in 2016. And they were very interested to see what would happen if they threw a developer amongst a group of journalists, and I was their developer, front end. And yeah, it worked out well, and within a month I was hired and became an ornament.
We spotted her.
Grabbed the gem, yes, yes.
Brought her to the other side of the table.
So, if you were a data viz, what would you be?
I would definitely be one of those very abstract, artistic, experiential ones that combine sound, and that way, like, there would be an element of storytelling that would happen over a period of time through user engagement.
But still, you'd be very accessible and understandable,
I would
right?
be very, I would yeah. be very thorough. Like, I'm a very thorough, precise person. So, yes, it would be, the steps would be well-defined, the user journey would be very clear, and for every action, there would be a clear and useful reaction. Clear and useful. Like, it would always be usable. Everything would be usable. There's no, like, fancy tricks just because you want to, you know, like, there must be a...
Yeah. Substance, yeah.
Knowledge. Substance.
Excellent. How about you, Julia?
That's a good question. I'd like to be a well-structured front-end data interface. Not having my own ability to build that, I'd probably be a map.
Maps are great. Yeah. I mean, we are very intuitive. So do you have a data superhero, and who is that?
That would definitely be Eddie. Okay. Eddie Isle, our director.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So why is Eddie your data superhero?
He is... I suppose, firstly, multi-skilled and multi-talented. So what he can do with data through programming or through development language. Just one example, I'm always astounded that something that I can do in a GIS in a couple of days, he can do with Python in half an hour or an hour. So I suppose he has a skill set that I just really admire.
Awesome.
having said that, he also has a very lateral way of thinking. So he tends to approach data very creatively, and there's always a unique starting point or a unique end point.
Excellent.
I don't think I can pick a particular person. I think having worked in an organization where we have so many different minds and voices approaching data and bringing the expertise to data, I would say that my data superhero would rather be a team of exceptionally skilled people with different voices and different perspectives, because that's like, I don't think there's one person that can really extract value from data.
That is a great answer.
Yeah.
Yes. I think Leila's really hit the nail on the head, though. Any data process is going to work better from a team perspective. You never get one, well, you can, in the rare cases of a D, get someone who can do everything.
Yeah.
But usually it's going to take different skill sets and different expertises, and as long as that team can function collaboratively and productively, absolutely.
And the fact that the formula is different for every piece of data, like, you may need this voice or this perspective in the team this time, and you won't need it another time, and I feel like I can't pick one person, or even just one, like, I can't, it's just, I see too well the collaboration and the combination that brings value, so,
So how about, and this is not necessarily to be a data book, or what's your favorite book?
The book that I've been recommending, or that I've been really interested in, and the organization I've been really interested in, is Forensic Architecture, who's headed up by a guy called Eyal Weissman. And, like, I've really loved the way that they've been able to capture their thinking around the work that they do. It definitely is similar to some of the work that OpenUp does, but it's just fascinating. Like, I mean, even if you don't read the book and you just watch his YouTube talks, like the talks that are up on YouTube, amazing. Like, just to see. Definitely recommend it, everyone.
Awesome.
Forensic Architecture.
We'll put that in the show notes so that people will be able to grab that. That's a great recommendation.
Okay, so my answer is completely the other end of the scale. I only read fiction. I like fantasy, and I have so many favorites. So I'm just going to tell you about the one I'm reading at the moment, but I'm reading a book that a very cool computer game was built on called The Witcher.
So is that the name also the computer game?
Yeah.
The Witcher? Okay.
Yeah, there's The Witcher 1, 2, and 3. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So, both good recommendations. Definitely.
Yeah.
And so we had met because with the DataViz meetup that you host here, and, you know, I do the same in Minneapolis, and it was great that we were able to connect. Now, I know you do some different events. In addition to DataViz, there's other community events and others. Could you talk about some of those events that you do here? So if someone's coming to South Africa, they'd be able to engage and take benefit of?
So our facility or our office is called CodeBridge, and it's based in Newlands, Cape Town. And basically, we run a series of different events that range from community evenings, which happen fortnightly. Most of our events happen either once a month or fortnightly. We have community evenings, and then we have various other local developer groups in Cape Town using our facility as a means of hosting their meetup. Mm-hmm. We have like a programmer's potluck, which happens on a Monday, alternative to the Cobridge evening, so we have that gathering, and then we just have occasional hackathons on the weekends. But again, everything's on Meetup that we do host, and I would advise everybody to go to the Open Up Meetup if they are in Cape Town.
Excellent.
Certainly, our Cobridge community evenings I find are quite a novel thing, where really a group of people or group of developers specifically are coming together every second Thursday night, and working on projects that are generally civic natured, and just being able to pull resources or pull in skills from among the group, or even to come and learn and work alongside a team and just to come and learn what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But I continue to admire the environment because it's not something I've come across before personally, but where people are voluntarily giving of their time to build something for the greater good of their society, which, you know, can take so many different shapes and forms. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's very interesting.
So from what I've seen, it looks like Cape Town has a fairly, you know, it's into that open data space, and it's trying to, you know, harness data as a government, as a country that's continuing to develop, obviously. Can you talk a little bit about more of that open data effort that's here in Cape Town and what's great and what opportunities you might see in that space?
Well, certainly the City of Cape Town's data portal was the first official data portal in South Africa, from a city point of view. So I think that City of Cape Town is definitely leading the way where that's concerned. Durban has something similar, but definitely not as well organized, and to my knowledge, I don't think Joburg, as our biggest city, even has anything that's consolidated at all. So certainly, yes, I think the space is being driven well by the local government here. And I think that because of that, the type of data-based organizations like ourselves are able to flourish in that organization. So perhaps that's why we have this lovely melting pot here.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So talking a little bit more about what you've seen, talking about data literacy, you had mentioned before, Julia, and talk a little bit about more what you're seeing going well in data literacy and what challenges that you see when you're talking to organizations, and maybe segment it with you, because you work a lot with governments and nonprofits. And let's talk a little bit more about that space, because I think people don't hear enough. They always hear about the corporate world, mm-hmm. and like, you know, so I'd love to hear more about what you're seeing in data literacy in both governments and also
sure.
in nonprofits.
So I can talk a little bit to both, but certainly the biggest challenge that we have in South Africa is a lack of basic literacy, never mind data literacy. Well, let's take it a step back. There's little basic functional literacy, and then very little computer literacy. And then the third layer on that is then the data literacy. So the gap is really, really big. And that's something that we encounter certainly within the free data training that we do for identified communities that we work with, for example, youth and such. And certainly there's a very big gap that we need to bridge there. And it's a wonderful space to work in, to see someone coming in with such a low literacy level to actually finding insights and finding it valuable and enlightening. So that certainly carries across into our local government departments as well. The data literacy challenge is enormous. And again, we're working with people who are excited to learn and have decided that it is something that they need to learn and they want to learn. So it's a really exciting space. My experience over the last 20 years before joining Open Up was in corporate. And having said that, the data literacy challenges are there too. Mm-hmm. So I think it is across the board.
And I think just to wrap up what Julia said, one of the important things to understand about data literacy and training in that space in this country in specific, in relation to the literacy crisis in our country, is it extends to the highest tiers of employment. This is, you know, you'll find someone in a top management executive position who has the same level of literacy and data literacy skills as, you know, people, they sort of somehow get by. A lot of people in this country just get by, or they get an opportunity and they go for it. Does not mean that they're necessarily skilled in all aspects of the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it doesn't really matter whether we're talking about corporate government or sort of nonprofit or CSOs, we're finding this literacy crisis permeating across the board and also across hierarchies within the workplace as well.
So how do you get people to recognize that as a problem and really take action on it. Because I think there's also you get to a level, like you're saying, if you're a senior person, you don't want to admit faults, right? You want to think that, you know, so it's harder to, you know, do that. So tell me more, like, what success you've had there.
I think, to mention before I answer your question, there's also sometimes you'll have someone in a higher position who knows the job and is equipped to deliver on it, but has not have the same skill. Someone in a junior position who has that skill, who needs to feed that back, and that communication sort of breaking down along the way. So workflow integration is very important. It's a very important aspect of data literacy training in South Africa. You can't give people skills without considering how they implement it in the workflow. The second thing that's really important is when people start to acquire these skills and how they adapt it, everybody knows there's a problem. Like, it's not, most South Africans know this is a very real issue. The problem is like budget, time, resources, capacity. Like, it's all the things that every, again, developing nation with who wants to move itself out of its situation is dealing with. And I don't think that it's necessarily a lack of wanting to address it or even finding the opportunity to address it. I think it's that there isn't enough time to address it, and the work needs to get done, things need to move, everybody has deliverables, everybody has something they need to report to or answer to. And it's about how do we balance overcoming these very critical issues alongside people also need the time to develop, and they need the time to upskill. And with our economy now, we've seen it in the training, it's not that easy for people, for HR, for example, to sign off on training for one of the employees because budgets are tighter. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing, I think when you approach training in this sector, in this country, you know, you're dealing, you have to consider all of these things. When you go in to train people, you also have to consider that all of this is happening in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for an organization like us, where we care about whether the impact was reached or not, it can become very tricky, I think, and very interesting as well to find creative ways. And we still want to make sure that somebody's going to use what we give them. It's not just, okay, we earned this much, or we, you know, we got paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than that.
I agree with what Leila's saying. There is a very clear awareness across the board that we have literacy challenges in this country. What I don't see a clear awareness of is the data literacy issue.
Yeah.
I find that people, from the person who signs off the training at the HR level, even up to an executive level, and certainly down to the actual participants of our training programs, they don't know what data is.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that data is. They don't realize that there is something called data literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that for us, what's been a very big challenge and what has hindered our program in a very large way is that we as a nonprofit don't have the marketing efforts to put into an awareness campaign to explain to people why data is valuable,
mm-hmm.
to explain to people what data cleaning is. What is data cleaning? I don't know. We don't need that. They don't know that their data is dirty. So there's certainly a large gap in the awareness of the usefulness of data and the usefulness of the various different types of data processing that you would have to overcome before people are even aware of the fact that they need training,
mm-hmm.
or even to the point of recognizing how much more efficient their jobs could be if they were trained. And also really important what Leila said there. It's so often people come into a course, they sit for 2 days, they're on top of everything, everything's lovely, they walk back into their workplace and they never use it again.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, the workflow integration is, as Leila said, it's critical.
So how do you go about that? Because, the whole idea is like, hey, let's have a workshop. We're all going to feel good about ourselves, pat ourselves on the back. And then you're just now behind work, so now everyone's busy. They put it away and they forget most of it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so how do you overcome that, do you think?
Well, we have the data hero here of methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So what Leila has brought into our curriculum at every level are real methodologies for actionable day-to-day integration in the workplace. That's in our generic material, but in the bespoke training that we do, we will go into an organization, understand what their processes are, understand who it is we're training, and then start to build the workflow integration for them.
And also work with their own data.
Yeah.
To meet the objectives or the outputs that they want to see within the organization as well. So I think it's a lot of hands-on work, and it's a lot of sort of communication that needs to happen between us and who we're training in order to make sure that we deliver something that we believe will be impactful and that they will be able to easily adapt. I mean, there's the general knowledge that they need to have, but you're not necessarily going to practice all of that, mm-hmm. right? But then there's the tips and the techniques and focusing on, like, you know, this is a quick way to do this, this is a quick way to do that. So, like, selling them small things or packaging it in a way where it's quick to adapt. Like, I need to do this. Okay, here, go and take that. Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. So I think the other thing that I've observed being here for about a month now is all the different cultures that come here. I mean, there's 11 official languages and a lot of, obviously, a lot of history over, you know, hundreds of years. And
absolutely.
And so how does that apply, come the workplace and adapting and, you know, being able to, you know, training in that in such a complex cultural society?
Most of the time, I don't think that it's something that we really battle with or experience continual challenges with, but not to say that there haven't been cases where, so for example, I needed to go into a school on the Cape Flats and do some data literacy training, and it was a 4-day training course, and the first day I struggled and I couldn't get people to pay attention to me. There were school children sitting with their backs to me. They weren't listening. I couldn't understand. And then the second day I phoned a D and I said to him, you know, I really feel like we're just wasting our time here. I could be better spent my time doing something more productive because I'm really not getting through. And it was only on the third day, so I'm probably a slow learner, that I realized that they didn't understand me.
Mm-hmm.
And that what we needed in that case was, of course, a translator. Mm. So that was a big eye-opener for us. And to realize then going forward, we had to ensure that, you know, obviously the people that we were teaching could understand us. And that was not something that we were familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that within those schools, they're even being taught English in the colloquial language. So it does, yeah, there are those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, if you can't communicate effectively what you're trying to teach,
mm-hmm.
it's just a complete waste of time.
What about, so one of the things when you're talking about data, and you were talking about that earlier with the senior executives, and I mean, and a team sport, is getting people to work together and understanding those skills and bringing them together and have that humbleness, even if you're a leader. How have you seen most effective when you're helping teams come together to work as a team around data? What has worked the best to bring those together?
I find it wonderful. This organization, it opened up the nature of the culture and the nature of the nonprofit that we are. The collaboration is natural. And for me, coming from a corporate environment into this space, it was very unnatural. And now taking the training that we're doing back into, for example, a corporate environment and even within a government environment, to light the fire under them of collaboration and for them to begin to explore and enjoy it and to stop feeling like, you know, I've got to hide what I'm doing because maybe I'm going to be judged or maybe somebody's going to steal my idea, or this is not the culture that we work within, and yet it is the given culture out there. So I find it a very exciting space to work in. Those are my favorite training sessions, is when you start to see this completely disparate group pulling together and just that fundamental enjoyment and discovery of the power of that kind of collaboration.
I also think that people don't really know what collaboration is. I mean, there's the idea of, there's two ideas of collaboration. There's one which I say is not really collaboration, but people think it is. Because, you know, the idea of teamwork is really popular
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And I'm like, I hardly ever see people doing teamwork. It's the idea of, like, we need multiple resources on a particular project. This is a project team, we're doing teamwork, and everybody's assigned their part,
mm-hmm.
and they must bring their part to the table,
mm-hmm.
right? That is the general assumption of what teamwork is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what collaboration is. Collaboration is also collaborating on decisions, collaborating on my share of the work with my peers. And I feel like once we explain that to people, once you show them that it's a joint effort, and that it's not, you're going to do this part, I'm going to do this part, let's meet back at 2 p.m. to
mm-hmm.
put it to force it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that idea of collaboration, is that we are involved collaboratively at all stages and all steps of the process and the decision making. And when they understand that, then the communication starts to flow. And then it becomes, because in order to deliver on that, you obviously need to have a very different mindset and different approach, and you don't have time to worry as much about whether you know, whether someone's going to judge you or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I need to move forward so you can move forward so that I can move forward again. And like,
mm-hmm.
explaining to them what that looks like.
Yeah, that's a great way to break that up. And I yeah, because yes, most companies, especially in companies, that teamwork is exactly like
yeah.
you say. It's sort of divide and conquer. You each write a paragraph. We come together. We try
exactly.
to create a story. And of course, different voices
mm-hmm.
means it doesn't go well together. Well, collaboration certainly. So then, when you're working with organizations, I mean, so between whether it's companies, governments, nonprofits, how do you get people to really generally work collaboratively, especially when you have people that have this hierarchical structure and they have this, you know, the egos that the, you know, that they bring to the table and all that. Talk a little bit more about like maybe a difficult case you had and maybe how you overcame it. If there's one that you could share without necessarily saying any names, but you know, I think people
honestly,
learn by examples.
I don't think we've ever actually had an issue.
We haven't. We tend to randomly group people. So if there are people within a learner group who know each other or who are naturally friends or who naturally work closely together, we split that up immediately. And I think, I honestly think from a training perspective, it's in the nature of the way that we put the information across, but the take-up is natural. We haven't really had challenges. Obviously, there's often the case of a voice that's louder than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then we try to teach the rule of how much space do we each own here,
mm-hmm.
Which is
like
something Layla can speak
yeah.
to much better
speaking
than
to
I.
the nth, like if there are five people, there should be five voices.
Mm-hmm.
And if
and
there are
each
10
should
minutes,
have a fifth
each,
of the time.
Yeah, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that sort of thing. So,
yeah. so we try and impact
and
that.
And these are all things that we set up at the onset of the training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of, and why this is why I love data processing sort of as a methodology is because it has to go through these different phases and each, and the, and there's a shift in hierarchy of certain voices along that process
mm-hmm.
because no one is ever going to be the expert
mm-hmm.
in one in every one of those processes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always going to have to like be active and then sort of surrender at a certain point and then be active again and surrender at a certain point. So I think that we use the processing pipeline as a way to shape how people think and behave during that process.
That's really,
I think
well
that's
stated.
Exactly
yeah.
the point. That's exactly the point. Because of the different skill sets and, that are needed, everyone has a space for a voice because everyone brings a different
mm-hmm.
skill set. And I think the data pipeline allows
yeah.
you.
So obviously you've done a lot to get where you're at, but where does it open up? Come 2 years, 5 years down the road, where do you hope to be? What's that vision of how to keep on growing and be more impactful?
Certainly from a data training point of view, we're reshaping our way of thinking. We are not a sales and marketing team. Layla and I are not salespeople or marketers.
Mm-hmm.
We're both trainers and curriculum developers and you know, we have specific technical focuses. So unfortunately, we have this amazing curriculum that we have built up with all our modules that we're no longer sort of offering openly to the public.
Mm-hmm.
We are still going to do internal training for organizations, but we're going to be turning our material into freely accessible online material and focusing our efforts in working with the local governments and training them within their workplace, within their workflows, and looking and pushing it from that point of view.
Excellent. Well, that's great.
Yeah, and I think in general, as Open Up, we just hope to occupy a bigger space within the open government space, and I think we're making a lot of very interesting and innovative sort of, we're taking very innovative steps towards how one can approach, how civil society can approach working with government in a collaborative way and in a way that addresses need, that assesses need, and that sort of finds different uses for the resources that are already readily available. I don't think trying to create additional resources in those spaces is really the answer. I think how do we empower the resources that are there and how do we get them to open up and listen and how do we clear the pathway for communication between citizens and government. So we definitely focused, I think, largely on government
mm-hmm.
and citizens and what form of empowerment, resources and support each party needs in order to be able to stand next to one another and communicate in a way where citizens aren't vulnerable in that they don't understand the language of government, and government isn't vulnerable in that citizens maybe by nature think that government is not interested, you know, and that sort of thing. So there's different sort of anxieties and vulnerabilities we're also addressing through our work, through the projects and products we're pursuing within those spaces.
Excellent. So I know one thing, when you and I met, Julia, first, you had your expertise, one of the things is GIS, and I think that's one of those things that gets not as well, just maybe not as well attention as it should be, because I think whether it's data visualization or just analytics in general, GIS, and so can you talk a little bit about GIS and what a little bit what you do with GIS around data, and also maybe a little bit around the direction of where you think GIS is going that helps towards even in that data literacy space?
It's an interesting perspective because I do come to data from a different along a different path than other people do. And if I need to analyze a data set, I can't really wrap my head around it until I can see it on a map. And in implementing on various projects that we've worked on here, one being the IS Maps website, I've learned and understood why that path is natural to me, which is something I just never thought through before. But if you can't look at information and relate it to yourself, then it's unrelatable. It's irrelevant to me as an individual. And as soon as I can see a map and see where something is in relation to me, it becomes relevant. I don't know if that answers your question. It very much has skewed my approach, but it has also brought, I think, for Open Up probably a benefit in terms of the different approaches, certainly to our training, and even how down to how we handle data work that we do. Maps are very powerful. I think that the GIS doesn't get the necessary attention. It gets a lot of attention, which is highly technical, which I think people find quite overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we do a lot of training of non-technical people in technical tools, for example, training non-GIS people in how to work in a GIS environment. And again, the first thing we've got to conquer is that fear. Mm-hmm. I can't do this. You know, this is overwhelming for me. This is... So I think that it's been too jargonized. I think it needs to be demystified. Mm-hmm. But certainly in South Africa, it hasn't got legs yet. Mm-hmm. GIS is being used, I suppose, to different levels of effectiveness in different fields. But I don't think that we've begun to tap into the real potential, even at a corporate level.
Excellent. Well, so we are in Cape Town, like you're saying, and I'd like to talk a little bit about what, you know, someone that hasn't been to Cape Town, talk a little bit about what excites you about Cape Town and its future in South Africa in general. So how about you, Leila?
What a question. I've been here really long, so obviously I'm bored. But no, Cape Town is great. I think one of the things that I always say I do love about my country, about South Africa, and about Cape Town as well, is there are very few, okay, besides the barriers that come from social circumstance, from poverty, and from the inequality that is explicit across our city and across our country, it's kind of one of those places where you feel like hope still exists, and where there's still opportunity to wake up and dream and then find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. And because I always say, like, when you're in a place that has a lot of that inequality, a lot of social circumstances that obstruct people or that form barriers around people being able to move out of the situation, where need exists, there's lots of work to do. Mm-hmm. So Cape Town's not an unproductive place. There's tons to do here because the need is so great, mm-hmm. that almost anything you think of could be beneficial to someone, and your time can always be spent somewhere. I mean, you could invest it in yourself, but there's like a million places in the city to invest it in. So like that's one thing that I love about Cape Town, is that it's so accessible to come up with something and then go and do it. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful city. I mean, we have the ocean, we have the mountain, we have the winelands. The province itself is amazing. Like, it's not too far to get to have a different experience. And I think that the, yeah, like, I think that's what I would say about Cape Town, is there's still hope here, and there's still dreams here, and there are many opportunities to find a way to do that something, and to find a need and think creatively about how you could address that need. And I think for me, that's the wealth of the city and the country itself, is lies in that, that ability to, I think, if you have it, to observe something and then take the opportunity that is there and that's literally just waiting there for people to take it. Yeah.
That is a fantastic answer, and could tell the passion there. That is great. How about you, Julia? What are your thoughts?
Well, firstly, you can now see why I love her.
Yes.
I can't speak much to Cape Town, unfortunately. I moved down from Johannesburg in 2013, and I live in Stellenbosch, so mm-hmm. I travel into Cape Town twice a week. I just continually every day feel blessed and thankful that I'm here and not in Joburg anymore. It's lovely, and I'm very, very fortunate.
But for the country, as a whole, how about Joburg and the overall South Africa? Why?
I would never live anywhere else. Uh-huh. I don't think there are many places in the world that can match us on weather, beauty, landscapes, beaches, hiking trails, mountain biking trails, horse riding trails. The place is just beautiful. But what we also have, and I think it does have to do with the melting pot of cultures, I think that we're a very tolerant society, and we're a very welcoming society, and very friendly and helpful.
Excellent.
As Layla says, there's hope, there's joy, there's singing and dancing in the streets.
Yes. There's an opportunity to educate yourself, especially with the diversity that we have. Like, I think I've traveled quite a bit, and I've worked with people and socialized with people from many different cultures. And I feel like in Cape Town, we have a lot of exposure to other cultures, other religions, other lifestyles. And I see that people in the world, they really struggle when they don't have that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Cape Town is one of the cities, even more so than in the upper parts of our country, mm-hmm. where you can really, if you want to have that personal development, you can get it in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to have to mm-hmm. sort of engage with the diversity that is here. And I think that is its wealth as well.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, so if someone wanted to get in contact with you, they're coming down here, they want to go to the Data Viz meetup or things, of course, you can look at meetup.com, but yeah. How about getting in touch with either one of you or Open Up? How would they go about doing so?
Absolutely. So our website is openup.org.za. There's a contact us page that has photographs, email addresses, julia@openup.org.za.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, appreciate the time today, and really thank you again for having me now several times over here. So it's been really a pleasure, and look forward to being back.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
The Data Able podcast is produced by Dave Mathias and Matt Jesser and made possible by Beyond the Data. At Beyond the Data, we are on a mission to help high-performing individuals successfully become champions for a more data-driven approach in their organizations. We believe that data science is only part of the equation. Getting value out of data requires building a culture that starts with you, is supported by executives, and trickles down to every facet of your organization. You can learn more about Beyond the Data and our approach at gobeyondthedata.com. Thank you.